Sony.
Hello, Canada. Today's date is March 31st, 2024. Welcome to a full edition of Canadian Common Sense, Canada's Issues, in about an hour. It is Tony in Saskatchewan.
And Lewis out here in BC.
Happy Easter, my friend.
Yes, to you too.
And to all our listeners across Canada and the world, happy Easter to you, or a Feliz Pascuas, as they would say in Spanish.
Wow.
Yeah, hey, I'm this is
the you're learning the language.
The Spanish tutor of mine is really helped paying off in spades here. So
right on.
All right. So hopefully you've got some good plans with the families today, Canada. I know that at least we're finally starting to see what spring looks like here. We still got a ton of snow on the ground, but the forecast for the next week is we're actually going to hit double digits in Saskatoon. Finally.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, I mean, +2 today, which feels, it's going to feel fantastic. And they keep saying, oh yes, a slow melt so that the runoff can fill up dugouts, reservoirs, etc. Sure, but when it's +1 or 2 in the afternoon and it drops down to -9, you're not thawing the ground out, so this slow melt does nothing.
Yeah, well, it's I don't know. I'm not feeling it for you. I mean, I've had these temperatures for a month, so sorry.
No worries. It's nothing but coming up roses in late April. So we got a few housekeeping items to take care of before we get started here. Listener Jason had commented on our Facebook page, said, you know, it's too bad we couldn't hear an entire episode on healthcare and using poor and bad examples. Hey, you know what, Jason? We could easily spend an entire episode talking not just about how awful this system is and giving examples. We could spend easily half that episode talking about ways to fix the system. And we touched on some of that last episode. But yeah, I mean, this is something that Lewis, you and I have talked about for, well, 25 years. I mean, ever since we met, we talked about how crappy the system is and ways to improve upon it. And it's just it's a never ending conversation because governments never take the hint and actually do something.
No, that's right. And I mean, the thing with our healthcare system in this country is that it's only gotten worse over the past 25 years. Like we were talking about its shortfalls when, like you said, when we first met. And ever since then, the problems have just gotten bigger and new problems have developed in those 25 years. And governments just have not taken the issue seriously. I mean, you've seen attempts to correct issues in Alberta and in Saskatchewan, but you've never really seen those solutions made long term, because if they had, those problems wouldn't be back, you know. So I mean, I would love to spend an entire episode talking about this on, you know, ways to improve it, what the biggest problems are with it. But honestly, there's been so much to talk about outside of that we can't really devote an entire episode to it. Not unless we want to sit here for 3.5 hours. And I really don't want to do that. I got stuff to do.
Yeah, well, exactly right. So, I mean, yeah, we'd love to do that. And maybe, you know, if the political season ever slows down enough in the summer, we could devote more time. But I don't think we'd ever be able to give a whole episode to it. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's one when you got a prime minister like the one we've got, he just gives you too much, you know, fuel to talk about every week. Maybe when Pierre is prime minister, we'll have less to talk about, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see, because I think that the amount of time we're going to have to devote to urging Pierre to get A, B, and C done might take up a lot of our capital as well. So.
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, you know, it's Max When Max was on our show the last couple of times, I mean, he said, you know, like when a conservative leader becomes prime minister, they're not conservative anymore. And so, I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, in this case, he'll be wrong. I'm not holding my breath. So I mean, I think we'll probably have our hands full, you know, with holding Pierre's feet to the fire too. So, but I mean, if the opportunity does arise, then it's definitely something that we would think about doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, on also on the healthcare front, listener Darren won the internet with this message. Sent in said, "Hey guys, we're thinking about this healthcare thing wrong." He says, "Really, what we need to do is temporarily identify with the left and just identify ourselves as cats and dogs, and then demand that veterinary healthcare." I thought, Darren, that's a fantastic idea. Why not say, "Give me a litter box and hook me up, cuz."
So Darren's idea is for us to become furries.
Yeah, the, exactly. Become
Okay.
furries and go see your vet. I'm
All right.
in.
Well, you first.
Temporarily, of course. He did say temporarily. I guess until you get that health care. But I mean, it's sad that we have to joke about that because, well, you would get immediate treatment if you indeed did identify as a cat or a dog. So,
No, that's true. Well, I don't know how true it is if you identified it as a cat or a dog and you get health care, but I understand the, you know, the
yeah,
humor behind it, right? But
exactly, yeah.
yeah, I mean it's true. I mean, like a cat or a dog gets immediate health care, we don't.
Yep, exactly. So, and also back to listener Jason, well, a little air in our tires. He said, "Hey, you know what? You guys are great and you provide a bitch slap of reality." I thought, Lewis, he's directing that right at you.
Thanks. I appreciate
He didn't say it directly, but I mean, I thought of you as soon as I read that. Bitch slap of reality. Yep, that's Lewis.
Well, I think you can take some pride in that too there, Tony.
Well, and I'll take it. We are your weekly bitch slap of reality, and we're proud to be there. So,
That should be our new tagline.
yeah, there we go. Yeah, that'll be
Canadian common sense, your bitch slap of reality.
absolutely. So, and those who are listening on Spotify, thank you for taking part in our poll. Last couple of weeks, we've attached a poll to the show, and well, it looks like the uptake is growing. So we'll keep attaching poll questions just for the fun of it, and as long as you're enjoying it, we'll keep doing it.
Yeah, and it's something that I brought up to you, Tony. Our listenership has grown a lot in the last few months. Like it's surprising actually how much it's grown. So we're eternally grateful. Like I think we've seen a 50% increase in the past few months. So we are eternally grateful to the people who've been with us since day one. Well, okay, nobody's been with us since day one because the first few weeks, I know you and I were the only ones who downloaded the show. So, you know, those of you who've been with us since day four, we really appreciate, you know, you guys and you know, sharing the show with your friends and family and I, because I know we've seen some messages from some listeners saying that they try and tell everybody they know about our show. So we're just so thankful to you guys. We really, really appreciate it. I mean, like we said, this was a project for us as a way to just vent our political feelings and ideas because you know both of us our wives get kind of tired of hearing of us complain all the time about what's going on. So we thought, well, we should just give ourselves an outlet. So we did. And, you know, and I'm not kidding that for when I say the first few weeks, the only people who downloaded the show were Tony and I. So now it's grown substantially. I mean, we got listenership in, you know, I think it's, you know, I can't remember what the exact number is, but I know it's way higher than I ever expected. And I mean, I've actually seen on, you know, Facebook groups and that where, you know, I don't promote the show on there or anything like that, but, I see other people promoting our show on these Facebook groups. You know, every once in a while you'll see a, question posed where it says, you know, where do you get your political news from? And you'll see at least a few people mention Canadian Common Sense. And so I'm, you know, it's weird for me to see that. And, but it's very cool. And I kind of smile every time I do. So it's great. Thank you.
Yeah, it is really weird because I think my expectations when we started this show was that you and I would be the only guys who ever listened to it, because it was just, yeah, it was just our channel to vent our political, you know, rantings, whatnot.
And yeah, we even said that we don't expect that anybody is ever going to listen to us, that we're just talking to ourselves. And we fully expected that that was what it was going to be. So the fact that it's grown to something more than that is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. Yeah, and like you say, I've also seen posts. One was on, I think it was CCFR, just said, hey, what's your go-to podcast? And I saw, you know, a few responses was our show. I was like, hey, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we left a few things out with talking about the Elections Act changes last episode. So I thought I would just wrap up the last few points of that in housekeeping today. I didn't want to stop you because you were kind of on a roll, Lewis. So I thought, yeah, you were actually winding the show up in pretty spectacular fashion. So I thought, yeah, we can save these till this week. So we'll get you, this won't get you as ticked off, because these are actually things that you and I, for the most part, don't have a problem with. But just for the information for everybody else out there, the few other changes proposed to the Elections Act that will probably not pass, just so you know, we've only got Parliament coming back for 2 weeks starting on April 8th, and there is going to be a budget in there, and we're going to talk more about that in the show. But the changes to the Election Act. One, mail-in ballot votes could be used for in-person votes. Okay, I mean, it's a ballot is a ballot, I guess, and as long as your name is checked off, fine. Care home residents to have dedicated on-site voting. About bloody time. So every care home would be its own polling station. Disabled voters incapable of voting could designate someone to vote for them. I like that one a lot, actually, as long as it's a trusted person. Make the vote on campus program permanent. So now university campuses will have their own polling stations. And that one, while it's tricky, they did it in 2015 and it worked. I mean, it worked better for Justin Trudeau and the Liberals, because a lot of university students tend to vote that way. But I like the idea that they can each get franchise, have that vote applicable to their home riding, wherever their home might be. So, I'm good on it. And now, what was the one? Here was the one. Here's two. The changes here are, well, these ones I have a little bit of problem with. One is a ban on, quote, intentionally false or misleading statements about election activities or the voting process to disrupt an election or its results. Okay, so what that means in English is they want to ban Tony from Saskatchewan standing at the polling station and then tweeting or posting on his X account, oh man, there are huge lineups here right now, don't bother voting at polling station X. And then suddenly Tony's followers go, oh, well, the hell with that, I'm not going to go vote then. Even though there was nobody at the polling station, just that Tony wanted the candidate who was leading to win. So they want to ban that kind of activity. Or, you know, the opposite way around. Everybody's got to get out and vote today for candidate X because candidate Y is leading by a landslide. Well, you don't know that. So
Yeah. Well, and there's also something that happened in the US election in 2021, or was it 2021?
Yeah, it has to be 22 or 20 because it's
2020. So in 2020, I think it was, there was a nope, sorry, not 2020. It was 2016. It was when someone tweeted out that if you didn't want to vote in person, to send to a text, it was text your vote for Hillary to this number, and that will count as a vote. And a
Oh.
lot of people did that, and then didn't go out and vote. So they want to crack down on that too, which, you know, I don't, I'm not upset about them saying anything or, you know, cracking down on this kind of stuff. It's when they start cracking down on other free speech elements. It's, you know, if you're doing things to actually persuade people to not vote, or to you know, by saying, or by saying, hey, election day was moved to Tuesday from Monday or whatever, and then people don't show up on Monday because they think that they can vote on Tuesday. You know, I do have a problem with people doing that. So it's you know, that's, I mean, you're kind of an idiot if you believe it, but I do have a problem with that. So, I mean, you are trying to, you know, to affect an election, and that's wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope, I mean, it's all about interpretation, but I hope that part of that, what this new policy is also as an example in 2021 when the Chinese Communist Party actually sent out statements in the in WeChat saying Canada had better vote for a liberal government and had better re-elect Justin Trudeau in a minority. Well, that had better get stopped, toot sweet, because
Yeah, like I hope this applies equally to everyone, not just to Canadians.
yeah,
You know,
exactly.
like that foreign entities are covered by this as well.
Yeah. Now, here's one that I like. Doesn't go nearly far enough, but it says prohibiting contributions through money orders, prepaid gift cards, or crypto assets. I like that what they're where they're going with this is they want to track exactly who is donating. I think that's great, except that a few years ago, we posted up on our Facebook page, Lewis, you had dug up 7 pages of donors who all donated the exact same amount of money to the candidate for, or not candidate, I guess the MP for Papineau, Papineau being a Montreal riding, and these 6.5 pages of donors all donating the exact same $147 and whatever cents. They're
No,
all
it was
from
like,
Vancouver.
yeah, it was like 1200 and some dollars.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay.
Yeah, there was like two amounts right down to the penny. It was like 1200 and some dollars, and 1400 and some dollars. And there was, like you said, almost 7 full pages of donors, all from the Vancouver area, all donating to the Papineau riding of Justin Trudeau. And they all had Chinese names, and yeah, like this is, that's, you know, they weren't donating in gift cards or cryptocurrency or anything like that. So I don't know how this would stop that from happening, but it does have to, they do need to, like you said, go a little bit further, because they got to stop this kind of stuff from happening. Right. I mean, when your donations are all the same, right down to the penny, which, what, like I said at the time, was, you know, that suggests that it's a larger amount that was divided between, you know, the 150 people that donated or whatever it was, you
Yeah.
know. So I mean, like that's, there's got to be something that catches that.
Yeah, exactly. So I hope that that provision actually goes even further. So I
Yeah.
actually like the way that's going. So
Yeah.
I guess there's some good of this after all. Okay, Canada, so we've got another busy one for you. So on the show today, axe the tax. Another million Canadians. Trudeau on the campaign trail. Come on, Niagara. Provincial budgets, the Nova Scotia Guard, and more. Where do you want to start, sir?
Well, let's start with Niagara because this one's kind of funny.
It's a little bit crazy, yes. And note, this week we are actually not talking about BC at all. It's going to be a little bit of a weird, uncharted territory for us, but.
Yes, so to our listeners, we apologize. We know how much you love hearing about the craziness in BC, but not this week.
We got nothing. But
Well,
Niagara.
I honestly I could, but I'm not going to because we got a lot of other stuff to talk about.
Yes, that's true. So in Niagara, we many of our listeners know because it's been hyped all over the news, there is a solar eclipse coming in April. I can't even remember what day it is. That's how excited I am about it. I think it's the 8th, is it? Or is it?
I don't
I don't know.
know.
Yeah, so there we go.
I'm like you.
So,
I'm like, hey, cool, but I'm not going out of my way to see it. So.
yeah, exactly. So there is a solar eclipse coming, and apparently those living along that 43rd parallel will get the best chance to see said eclipse. So Niagara is the hot spot right now for Canadians to see the solar eclipse. So in advance of said solar eclipse, Niagara region has declared a state of emergency. And I just had to ask myself, okay, so you're declaring a state of emergency because you want to have access to resources to handle the big crowds that are coming to see the eclipse. And so when you and I were talking before the show, Lewis, I had said, well, what do they do in the middle of summer when there's a crap ton of tourists there? No state of emergency then.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, right? I mean, I was in Niagara just a month ago, basically. And there was maybe 40 other people there when I was there because it was a Monday. But I have also been there in the summer. And you can't even move. There's so many people. So I don't know how they handle that without declaring a state of emergency if this is it, because I mean Niagara has their whole raison d'être is to host as many people as possible. So why are they so scared of this crowd? I mean, it's not like I said before the show, you know, it's not like this is a like a gigantic Lamb of God concert, or this is, you know, not like this is a, you know, big protest or something. It's a bunch of people who just want to see the, you know, the sky go dark and then leave when it's over. So, you know, there's no like people coming with malintentions, you know.
Well, and like you had said, they're showing up, they're leaving, so maybe some will stay the night in a hotel, otherwise, but I mean those who are coming from Barrie, Ontario or whatever, they're gonna drive home because they're only a couple hours away. And I mean,
Yeah.
so the mass majority of the people who are coming are not really staying, so I think we're jumping the gun just a little bit.
Yeah, just a bit.
So
Watch, you know, in a couple of weeks when this all goes down and there's like major problems and everything because they didn't get extra policing or whatever, we're gonna look stupid. But I don't think that's gonna happen because I mean, like I said, these are not people that are going there, you know, to protest or cause trouble or whatever. They're just going there with their kids to show them a solar eclipse and then leave.
yeah, exactly. So, yeah, kind of jumping the gun a bit, but hey, you do you, Niagara. So, also in Niagara, you and I, the taxpayer, are damn generous Canadians. You and I, the taxpayer, spent $115 million last year housing illegal immigrants just in Niagara region. And I thought, okay, so that's putting the illegals in hotels. They get a per diem for food and incidentals and whatnot. And then, of course, I thought about that. It's like, okay, I know that Niagara was one of the areas that brought in a lot of illegal immigrants in the tourism off season. And I don't use the word asylum seekers, but just so you know, those two terms are synonymous, because if they were actually seeking asylum, they would do that from their own country and then come here when they were accepted. When you cross into Canada illegally, you're an illegal immigrant. So I will never use the term asylum seekers, but just know that that's what I'm talking about, or that's who I'm talking about. So anyway, 115 million for illegal immigrants in Niagara. Kingston was another community that took in a lot of illegal immigrants. Toronto, of course, that's been very publicized, the number of illegals that are overwhelming Toronto's homeless shelters right now. Winnipeg has taken in a slew of illegal immigrants because they're only an hour from the US border. And Calgary, Vancouver, especially. So just ask yourself, Canada, if in Niagara we're spending $115 million, how much are we spending nationwide? We're in the billions, folks, just to put illegal immigrants in hotels while they await a hearing. Insanity.
This is another one of those things where you go, this is not the way to handle it. Yet, this is the way they continue to handle it. Doesn't make any sense. I mean, what is so bad about sending people home who did not follow the proper procedures? Because there are people out there who are following the proper procedures. And it takes them, years, but they do eventually get accepted and brought into Canada in the through the proper channels. And but the people who, show up here illegally, I mean, there's a reason you're called an illegal alien. It's because it is against the law to do what you're doing. So, I mean, I'm not going to say that, refugees should be like refugees who just show up on, on a boat or something like that should be just turned away, because sometimes, I mean, that's the only way they can get out of the country that they're in. But if you're coming from a country that is not considered a place where refugees are accepted from, like the US, because that's where most of the illegal aliens are coming from, is from the US. They're not necessarily Americans. They're mostly, South Americans, Central Americans, Mexicans, right? But they're coming from a first world country, right? They're crossing the border from the US, which instantly makes them not refugees. Like, that's the rule. That's the law. That's an international law. And I believe in the agreement that Canada and the US have with each other, is that if someone is claiming refugee status coming from the other country, so if someone's coming from Canada into the US or from the US into Canada and they're claiming refugee status, it gets supposed to get rejected immediately because they were coming from a first world country. So that to me is a pretty solid standard to follow.
Yeah,
So
absolutely it is.
yeah.
Yeah, that's a safe third country agreement. And yeah, and you're right. I mean, often they're flying into New York, taking a taxi up to, upstate New York, and then just walking over to Roxham Road. That's been the most popular port. So yeah, time to shore up the border. So
Yeah, no, I mean, and it's like, those people, when they come over, they should just be, turn them around, send them back.
yeah.
I mean, they already landed in a safe country. They cannot claim asylum or refugee status coming across the border from a safe country. And the US is a safe country.
Yeah, so let's just continue that, and we'll just talk a little bit about immigration. I was stunned when I heard the figures, and I first saw it from Maxime Bernier, but then I was reading through different articles to support it. In 9 months, in the 9 months since Canada's population broke 40 million last year. 9 months later, well, we've hit 41. 1 million new Canadians in 9 months. And it's not just people like us, you know, who are going to be called xenophobes that are raising these alarm bells. Scotiabank economists are even saying, okay, you've got to put the brakes on this because our economy is not growing fast enough to absorb these people. And not just that, you really need to think more about immigration in terms of what Pierre Poilievre is talking about as far as matching immigration to skills needed, aka the points system that we used to have that Maxime Bernier has promoted on our show.
Yeah.
This, I mean, we can't handle a million new people in 9 months. This is insanity.
No, and this is during a 9 month period where people have been going on and on and on and on about the affordability of housing in this country. I mean, because ever since we hit 40 million, it's been a pretty general talking point with the pundits and on political TV shows and that, where you're hearing them say, you know, we can't, you know, the high immigration levels are really affecting, you know, the cost of housing and the ability of Canadians to afford housing. And yet during those 9 months, we accepted another million people. So, I mean, this is insane.
Yeah.
And I mean, it might even be more than a million because Canadians don't, replicate ourselves fast enough, you know, like, you know, we're not having as many kids as we should. And so you need immigration just to keep the population level where it is. So in those 9 months, we probably accepted more than a million people. But yeah, I mean, this is getting really stupid at this point.
Well, it's almost to the rate where it's out of control. So we can't house the people we have now. So now our homeless shelters, which would normally be for, well, homeless Canadians, are now for refugees and, new arrivals. And we're not building homes fast enough to keep pace with the people coming in, nor are we hiring enough doctors and nurses, building enough hospitals, and, you know, right down the social safety net. So what the hell are we doing to ourselves?
Yeah. And you know, it almost feels like they're just accepting anybody that applies right now. Because, I mean, I'm not noticing, you know, more doctors. I mean, so who are all these people that they're accepting? Because I'm not seeing more doctors. I'm not seeing more, you know, skilled trades. I'm not seeing more of what we should be seeing of. And so I just don't know what criteria they're using to determine who gets in, because although with the amount of people that are coming in, it just seems like if you apply, you get in.
Does seem that way. Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't know. I mean, this is getting kind of crazy, to be honest.
Well, and you know, in the realm of ridiculous statements, Sean Fraser, who's now the immigration minister, had said, I don't know, this was a couple of months ago, and he had said, oh, well, we need more immigrants to come in to build the houses to help our, you know, supply crunch. And then, can't remember which news outlet, but someone decided to drill down a bit and point out that, well, only 7% of new immigrants actually get into building trades. So that's not where your carpenters are coming from. They're coming from people who are already here. So that argument is now moot.
Well, if 7% of a million would be 70,000. So yeah. 70,000 new people in construction, that should be a lot. But we're not seeing that. I have my doubts that 7% is accurate.
Yeah, because you're right. 70,000. That's well, I mean, that would fill the needs of maybe a smaller province or whatnot. But still, you're not seeing that upkick in housing starts. You're right.
Yeah.
So, all right. So let's move on from talking about the immigration crisis to, well, let's talk about Justin Trudeau, because He is out campaigning around the country right now. And yes, he is campaigning. He's making housing announcements everywhere he goes. He's talking about $10 daycare. He's talking about all kinds of wonderful things that the federal government can do. And Lewis, you're going to point something out that Canadians need to know right away on that. Because when he was in Vancouver the last week, he talked about a renter's bill of rights. Because those evil capitalist landlords are absolutely killing Canadians on the West Coast. He talked about a legal aid fund to protect tenants against unfairly rising rents, rent evictions, and bad landlords. $15 million to set up a legal aid fund for for tenants with bad landlords. Renters should get credit for on-time payments on their credit score. I'm not completely against that.
I'm not even remotely against that. I actually think that's a great idea. It's like probably the best idea he's had in 8 years. So, I mean, that's actually a really good idea. You should, I mean, everything else you get it gets reported to your credit rating, right? So why not that? I mean, that would also help landlords get paid on time. So that's a good idea. I'm not opposed to that at all.
And that actually is a really good idea. But there's one really, really big problem with that, Lewis. And what might that be?
Well, I mean, all of this is provincial jurisdiction. I mean, the credit score rating with your rent checks, that's not. I mean, that's a federal thing. So I don't have a problem with that at all. But everything else, it's all provincial jurisdiction. I mean, you can't, like, the legal aid fund and everything. What about, so a legal aid fund for renters? Well, what about for the people doing the rent, or like the landlords? I mean, is there a fund to help them when they, when they finally boot someone out after 8 months of trying to get rid of them, and they haven't been paid rent in 8 months, and they get in there and they find there's $30,000 in damage to to the home they own? Is there going to be a fund for that? Because that's a very real thing and happens on a regular. So, I mean, I'm so sick and tired of hearing about renters being the ones that are hard done by. I mean, try being a landlord. I am a landlord, and it's not, a picnic. I mean, I happen to have a fantastic tenant, but I haven't always had fantastic tenants. And I know people who lost their home during COVID because the tenants said stopped paying rent because they were told they could. By the federal government, they were told they could stop paying rent. So they stopped paying rent, even though they never lost their job. But the owner, the landlord, could only stop paying the mortgage on that house for 3 months. And those people stopped paying rent because there was no way that you were even allowed to kick someone out or evict somebody. And I think it was for at least a year during COVID that you couldn't evict somebody. So they went that entire year without paying their rent. And the landlords couldn't sell the house because the new owners wouldn't be able to evict those people. The new didn't want those tenants because they weren't paying their rent. And so eventually they had they completely they've had to stop paying the mortgage on it because they couldn't afford to pay the mortgage on two houses. And that second house, that was their retirement plan. And they had to and they lost it. They couldn't even sell the house. So, I mean, this is a big problem in this country with the inability to evict, the inability to collect rent when the tenant stops paying rent, and then the damage. Lots of tenants leave the house in a complete disaster, and the landlord ends up spending tens of thousands of dollars fixing the place up just to rent it out again. I mean, where's the fund for that?
Well, that's a good point. There was a Well, remember last year we talked about several cases in the greater Vancouver area where that was exactly the case. Home was trashed, and then one landlord actually had gotten a demolition permit, but yet still got sued because he didn't demolish the house fast enough because his mom was going to move in, and then he was going to demolish it. But since nobody moved in within, I think it was a year, he was actually fined. There was another
Yeah,
homeowner in Nova Scotia.
$30,000,
Yep.
$30,000.
That's right, yeah. And then there was a homeowner in Nova Scotia who had rented a place out, and the tenant didn't pay rent for several months. And when they finally got the tenant out, the place was completely trashed. And this guy was shattered because that was his retirement project, to was to have income off that second home. So all across the country, this is happening. I'm all for having a renter's bill of rights, but it should be an agreement that both parties enter into. And the federal government has no business whatsoever trying to regulate that. It's not their
No,
jurisdiction.
rentals are provincial jurisdiction. And so this is how, Tony and I, this is one another sign to us that Justin Trudeau is campaigning right now. He's preparing for an election because he is announcing all kinds of things that actually infringe on provincial jurisdictions. So it's all stuff that he doesn't even have to follow through on. Because if he did, provinces would sue. And he would lose in court over this because th they are infringing on provincial jurisdictions. So these are things he doesn't have to follow through on, or actually might not even be able to follow through on. So this to me sounds like he's making promises he can't keep. And that when you make promises you can't keep, it's usually an election.
Well, I think it's important that you framed it that way. That's exactly what he's doing, is he's making promises he knows he will never have to follow through with because he can't. And he knows that there is not really any premiers in the country right now that like him. So he's more than happy to walk in and say, "I'm going to clean up this premier's mess," knowing that he just washes his hands as soon as he walks out. So yes, he is definitely campaigning a lot about housing, for example. He's talking a lot about health care, for example. He's talking an awful lot about things that the provinces do, and very little about what he himself as a federal leader does. And there's a reason for that, so that, yeah, he completely absolves himself of responsibility. So I am now going to, have I doubled down already, or is this triple for me?
We 2 weeks ago, you and I both doubled down,
Okay,
so this would be tripling down.
Okay, I am officially tripling down on my call for an election federally in May. Now, Lewis, you had brought this up very wisely a lot when we doubled down, that April 11th, the Bank of Canada will be announcing if they're going to move on Canada's interest rates. Well, Justin Trudeau and the punditry class, completely randomly and just, amazingly in lockstep with the federal government, have announced that yes, inflation in Canada is now down to 2.9%. So we are within that 2 to 3% range for inflation. So the Bank of Canada may look at lowering their prime lending rate on April 11th. I know that there was somebody on this show that suggested that might happen.
Yeah, I think that was me.
That would have been you, yes.
Yeah, it was me. Yeah. So yeah, I know, and I predicted that a couple of weeks back, or I think it was even maybe a month ago now
I
when
think
I
so. It was
first
longer
when
than a
I
couple of weeks.
yeah, so that April 11th, the Bank of Canada will start dropping the interest rates. The Trudeau government will present a budget in the House of Commons just a few days later. The government will fall somehow, whether the NDP break ranks and vote against the budget, or or Justin Trudeau decides to go see the governor general and just dissolve the government on his own. But he's going to be basing this election call on the fact that interest rates are lowering, inflation rate is down, all of these all these proposals he's making that infringe on provincial jurisdiction. He's going to make it sound pretty rosy and call an election. And so I'm with you. I'm tripling down on this. I think there will be an election in May.
Yeah. Now I, my thoughts on the budget vote is I think he's going to end up Joe Clarking it. Now, Joe Clark did not do this on purpose in 1980, but when Joe Clark presented his budget in 1980, he failed to do a head count and did not realize he did not have the votes to pass said budget. So it was defeated and Joe Clark's government fell. Justin Trudeau, I think, is going to miraculously have just enough Liberal MPs who don't get to the House of Commons in time to vote or stay home so that the budget does not pass. So the result is the same. We're going to see his government defeated on the budget and use that budget as a campaign document in the stylings of Doug Ford. And away we go in May.
Yeah, there are signs that there won't be an election, right? I mean, there's the fact that in this in the Elections Act bill that they presented, that they were going to move the election by a week, right? And we all know that that was to give those 80 MPs their pensions before they got voted out. So I mean, there are signs saying that there is not going to be an election this year. But there's a lot of signs right now pointing to the fact that there will be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, and I'm always wrong when it comes to Justin Trudeau. I don't feel like I am this time. But you're right. I mean, that Elections Act bill took the wind out of a lot of people's sails who were hoping for an early election. Because, yeah, I mean, you've got 80 MPs who will benefit from moving the election date 1 week. And there was a gentleman on X that I follow who had just said, so, why couldn't they have moved the election a week earlier to avoid Diwali? Yeah. Well, we know the answer to that one.
Yeah, because they weren't trying to avoid Diwali.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm still bullish on a May election. So I could be wrong. And with Justin Trudeau, I usually am. So anyway, there's somebody else who's been campaigning across the country. Well, for a hell of a long time already. His latest slogan is Axe the Tax. And yes, we are talking about Pierre Poilievre. He drew crowds of thousands across the Maritimes on his Axe the Tax rally. He was in Winnipeg just a couple days ago on Thursday night. Actually, listener Trevor said that he was inviting his 65-year-old mom to come to the rally with him. So I'm curious how that went. But in Ottawa, Pierre drew enough people out to an Axe the Tax rally that it looked like a bloody rock concert. I was absolutely stunned looking at the video from that rally, how many people. There was easily a couple thousand people in Ottawa for a carbon tax rally.
Yeah, I think it was over 3,000.
I believe it. Yeah, it was enormous.
Yeah,
and it's not even an election.
Yeah, same in Edmonton. There was over 3,000 people at the Edmonton rally as well. So, I mean, like, it's really gathering steam. I mean, if you've got over 3,000 people coming out to a rally being held by the conservative leader in Ottawa, you know that the liberals are in trouble.
Yeah, and to me, that's more fuel to the fire for an early vote, because these numbers aren't going to get better for Trudeau, and his MPs know that.
Yeah, they're only going to get worse. Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's we all know that the carbon tax is increasing on Monday to $80 a ton from 65. It's going to add another 3 cents to a liter of gasoline across Canada. So we know that these rallies aren't going to stop the increase in the carbon tax.
Yeah.
But what don't
forget, the carbon tax doesn't just apply to fuel, right? Like, it doesn't just apply to gasoline and diesel. It applies to your electricity bill. It applies to your natural gas bill. It applies to your home heating. Oh, no, wait. Does not apply to your home heating oil. But it applies to everything else. And then, so that does apply to your groceries and your clothing and all of that as well, because it takes a truck burning diesel to get all of that stuff to the stores. So everything you buy, you're paying carbon tax on, and then you're paying GST on that carbon tax as well,
Yep,
because
exactly.
because on fuel taxes, the GST applies to everything on that price. So when you go to the pump and you see your GST breakdown on your receipt, because it always breaks it out, the GST, your GST is on all of the fuel taxes, the road taxes, the carbon tax, all of that. All the taxes that are on fuel, the GST is charged on that as well.
Yep, that's right. And
Which I've never understood how that has continued to happen, because that's technically illegal under Canadian tax code. You're not allowed to charge tax on a tax. Like, that's against the law. But apparently, that's never been challenged in court. I'm really shocked.
yeah, well, and I mean, not that I wanted to see this happen, but Brian Mulroney's passing shone a spotlight on that very aspect of the GST, because more people talked about the GST being Mulroney's most unpopular policy, right? So, yep, that tax on tax is increasing everything. But I'm really glad you brought up the home heating aspect, because, well, thank you, StatsCan, but for noting that through the month of January, when Saskatchewan was not charging G or carbon tax on natural gas for home heating, or electricity for home heating in Saskatchewan, the Saskatchewan inflation rate actually went down 1.1% to 1.9% for the month of January, whereas nationally it was 2.9%. And StatsCan also noted that not charging that carbon tax, and I'm guessing this is also combined with price changes in natural gas, but resulted in a 26.6% price decrease in natural gas compared to January of 2023. Well, Pierre Poilievre's got to be loving those numbers.
Well, so much for their fallacy of the carbon tax adding 0.1% to the inflation rate.
Yeah, and so much for the fallacy that you would get more back in rebates than you would spend.
Well, I mean, some people do, but most people don't. I mean, like, they're trying to claim that 8 out of every 10 Canadians gets more back than they pay, which is BS. I mean, some people get back more, but why are they getting back more? Like, I don't understand why that's a good thing. Like,
Yeah.
I don't get it, because all that means is that this is a wealth transfer. It's not has it's has nothing to do with, pollution or global warming or whatever you want to call it. It's all about wealth transfer. It's all about taking from, people who can afford to pay the carbon tax and giving it back to people who can't. And it's like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, that has nothing to do with trying to curb anything at this point. I mean, let's be real. You can use a tax to affect behavior if there's an alternative. If it is a luxury, and there's an alternative, such as smoking. They increased taxes on cigarettes dramatically back in the 90s, and it curbed smoking in this country. A lot of people stopped smoking because they couldn't afford to smoke anymore, because they added something like 30 to 40% to the price of a pack of cigarettes, and it kept going up. After and yeah, they cut smoking way back in this country by putting a tax on it like that. But that's because there is an alternative to smoking, and that's not smoking, right? When it comes to the carbon tax, there's no alternative. Like, you can't just not drive a car anymore. You can't not heat your home anymore. You can't not have air conditioning, in the Okanagan, I mean, or in Toronto, I mean, like, it gets really freaking hot in those places. You need air conditioning. You can't not have these things in a country the size of Canada. Like, if you were in Europe, That's different. There's a train station in every small town. There's a train station that go like there's trains that go everywhere in Europe because it's a very small area and a lot of people. And so they're able to have a train network. We can't do that here. You know, I mean, like four, I think it's three or four Germanies fit in the province of BC. I mean, it's like you and there's 5.5 million people in BC and there's 90 million people in Germany. So, I mean, you can't do what they've done. You just can't. There is no alternative to driving in British Columbia or in Ontario or in Manitoba. Like, there's just no alternative to that. And you can, and don't tell me the alternative is electric cars because you're being charged a carbon tax on the electricity too. And there's also the distances in Canada are huge. Yes, it is possible to drive across the country in an electric car. It's going to take you twice as long or even longer than driving a gas-powered vehicle. But yes, it is possible. But you know what isn't possible? Me as a contractor using an electric truck to tow a real heavy trailer around, because the range on that drops to about 105 to 110 kilometers. And I do probably more than double that in a day. So, you know, it's, you can't, there are not alternatives. And you don't charge carbon taxes to change behavior on something you can't change. You know, that's, it's not how it works.
No, you're.
With smoking, I mean, they charged you taxes and people stopped smoking. But that's because there was an alternative. There is no alternative right now.
No, that's right. I mean, the wealth transfer thing is exactly what it is. When back in 2016, I guess it was, when the carbon taxes were first being proposed, thank God we had Brad Wall in this country. I mean, he's still one of the most effective premiers of our, modern generation, in my opinion. When the time came they were discussing carbon taxes, Brad Wall just asked flat out, "Okay, you want to take money here, but you want to give it all back. So then what's the point?" And Justin Trudeau pleaded with Brad Wall, said, "Well, what if you even just called your provincial gas tax a carbon tax so that we can say we have a carbon tax?" He's like, "No, well, I'm just not on for the carbon tax." But I mean, congratulations to Brad Wall. He decided to step down and actually live a happy civilian life, which he's doing now. But too bad he didn't stay to keep the fight going, because at least he had some passion to it.
Well, I would say that you're not exactly in bad hands with Scott Moe,
We're
so
not, no.
no. But I mean, I do understand. I mean, Brad Wall was a great premier, but Scott Moe is no slouch either.
No, that's right. So, actually, since we mentioned Scott Moe, let's talk about provincial budgets now, because, well, Scott Moe and his government just released their provincial budget, as most provinces have. And we talked about BC's budget projections of $9.8 billion deficit and thought that is absolutely insane. Well, the government of Quebec said, "Hold my poutine." And the Quebec government said, "We're going to have an $11 billion budget deficit for this year, just so that we can prove that we're the worst financial handlers in the country." Yay, Quebec. But they're in good company, because the government of Ontario had said, "Well, we're going to have a $9.8 billion budget deficit, even though we are the most heavily indebted sub-sovereign government in the world. Don't forget that, Ontario. We're going to bring the biggest spending budget in Ontario history and invest in Ontario jobs, invest in Ontario. Fantastic." Somehow, they're projecting they're going to recover from this deficit, and by the time the next election year comes along, 2026, that deficit's going to be down to $500 million. That's a pretty big hill to climb, Ontario.
Yeah, I don't believe it.
Nope.
I mean, and here I thought Ford was a conservative.
What did we think wrong? I thought that
Yeah.
too.
Yeah. I mean, that's insane. I mean, I don't know how anyone calls themselves a conservative when they have the highest spending budget in the province's history.
Yeah. Yeah, that's obscene. And what's really obscene is that so far, from what I'm looking at, only Alberta and New Brunswick are actually balancing their budget and projecting, modest budget surpluses. And that's obscene. I mean, Saskatchewan is close to balance. They've just released their budget, and it's an election year in Saskatchewan, and they're projecting a $273 million deficit. So that's quite a small deficit.
Yeah,
But I
and that, I mean
mean,
that's almost within the range of error. I mean,
right.
you could easily they could easily balance the budget by the time they call the election, right? And say, hey, we projected a $273 million deficit, but hey, we are on track to actually have a surplus now, right? And when the election is called, and then they can run on that.
Well, I feel like that's what's going to happen because the election isn't scheduled until the fall here. So that's very likely that's going to happen. I mean, in New Brunswick, well, they have an election year this year as well. I'm not sure when this year, but I mean, yeah, they can already run saying, well, hey, 3 years in a row or 3 or 4 years in a row, they've got a budget surplus. So I want what they have.
Yeah, but I mean, what happened to Ford?
I mean, that's really something, isn't it? I mean, he talked about cleaning up the mess left by Kathleen Wynne and Dalton McGuinty, which needed to happen. But then suddenly, yep, we're just going to blow up the spending and then but we'll rein it back in a couple years. Well, I guess wait and see, Ontario. I don't even want to say elections have consequences because Doug Ford is still better than any of the alternatives.
Yeah, which is saying a lot right now, considering he's not very good at the moment.
Good point.
But and BC's having an election this fall too, so
Right.
I don't know what they were thinking posting that kind of budget deficit in an election year. But NDP be NDP.
Yep, they most certainly are. All right, so let's go to Alberta now. Danielle Smith had recently announced that while they're having a budget surplus, she didn't rule out borrowing money. And suddenly now we find out why, because she has said that the city of Edmonton is having a big budget gap they need to address, just like the city of Calgary. And well, in Edmonton's case, there's something going off the rails here. The city manager has left his job, and he is the sixth one to do so in, I can't remember how long, I think it's in 10 years.
For, oh yeah, I think it's 10 years, yeah.
And yeah, he just said like they've got the, well, I guess buying a fleet of electric buses that they can't use probably took a big bite out of their budget.
Yeah.
And yeah, the city's having an awful lot of trouble right now. And Danielle Smith is thinking, well, if we have to step in as a provincial government, we will. And of course, the city of Edmonton is blaming the provincial government, saying, oh, well, they're just not sending enough money to us. Well, where have we heard that before? Oh, from every politician in the country.
Yeah.
It's got to be time somewhere where people just say, you know what? Maybe we need to put our own house in order. And I'm looking right at you, Chairman Chow, because all you continue to do is say, oh, Doug Ford needs to give us more money. Justin Trudeau needs to give us more money. We have a $1 billion budget gap in Toronto. We need to go to the taxpayers for more money. And Edmonton's doing the exact same thing, by the way. Edmonton also is smacking their citizens with a very large property tax increase.
Yeah, or you could be like Calgary, where they want to impose all kinds of brand new taxes.
Yeah, so I mean,
So.
we just need some accountability. I mean, I almost wonder if these city managers are jumping ship just because they're frustrated with the conditions they work under. Because we were talking before the show, the city manager in Edmonton is a $350,000 a year job, which I thought was outrageous, Lewis, but then you kind of got me on board with how it's not.
No, I don't think it is. I mean, when you're dealing with a I mean, they're essentially you got to look at it as if it's a corporation. I mean, you've got a corporation with, I mean, how many employees do they have? It's probably the city of Edmonton probably has somewhere in the vicinity of about, I would say probably 40,000 employees. So I mean, like that's a pretty big company. And you need somebody who actually knows what they're doing to run that. And you're not going to get that if you're paying 100 grand. And if you're, but I mean, obviously, you're not getting that at 350 either at the moment because Or unless there are some, there were some competent managers who were working that position, who just got so frustrated with the political situation or political interference by council and all that, where they maybe got hamstrung and they couldn't do their job properly and they just got fed up and left, which is entirely possible, because I do find that councils, city councils, and mayors do tend to think that they're more important than they actually are, because they're not the ones who run the government, like the city, the municipal government. The mayor doesn't run it. The councilors don't run it. They come up with ideas, they vote on them, and then they get the city manager to implement it. They don't actually do that work. The manager, city manager, and their staff do it. And they actually have to come up with the plan. They have to implement the plan. They have to do all of that. The politicians, oftentimes, I find that they think that they're like celebrities, or that they're more important than they really are, and start micromanaging and stuff when they are not supposed to be. That's not their job. Their job is to give the city manager a direction to go, and the city manager has to implement it. And so the city manager is the one who actually runs the show. They run the whole municipal government. So I have no problem with them being paid 350 grand a year. I mean, just, you got to make sure that who you're hiring is actually good at their job, though. But you're not, absolutely not going to get anyone of quality if you pay $100,000 a year to run a city the size of Edmonton.
So, it's got to be political interference or something. There's something going on there that they're losing city managers and the city itself. I mean, it's well, I mean, they, I guess they can still clear snow and fix potholes, but there's an awful lot going on in that city that really needs to get fixed. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, every big city in Canada is in the same boat. But I mean, I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that municipal governments tend to be very left wing.
True.
Um, and uh, and they get all these programs implemented that really cities should have no part of.
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean they that was actually one thing was mentioned in that article too, is that the city of Edmonton says that the provincial government has offloaded services to the city that without funding being attached to them. Whether that's true or not, I mean I've heard that dog whistle even when I lived in Edmonton 20 years ago, so.
Oh, I made a mistake, by the way. Did I say 40,000 employees?
Yes.
Okay, I meant 4,000 employees, not
Oh,
40,000.
okay.
I meant 4,000 employees. But even that was wrong. I just looked it up. It was 5,500. The city of Edmonton has 5,500 employees.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's still a big company, right? That's a big company to run. So, I mean, yeah, I think, if you want someone who's good at their job, you got to pay them,
Oh, for sure.
especially when they're the ones who actually do run the city. Like, the city manager is the one who actually runs the city.
Yeah, for sure. So, well, from paid employees to really dedicated volunteers, we're going to wrap the show up talking about something that's, well, I think is a real positive thing. The Nova Scotia government has decided that we are going to establish the Nova Scotia Guard. Now, what the Nova Scotia Guard is, and we'll tie right into it, it's essentially a government-established group of volunteers who are there to assist communities during and after emergencies. So, like storms, wildfires, natural disasters of any kind, etc. And as I was going through it, I thought, what they're doing is they're actually supplanting the need to call in the Canadian Armed Forces whenever there's a natural disaster. This is awesome. So, statement from government from Premier Tim Houston, and he says, and I quote, "As we've seen from time to time again, whenever an emergency happens, the first thing Nova Scotians do is step up and help their neighbors. That's the Blue Noser way," end quote. They do love that boat, Lewis. You're right.
They do. They love that boat. Yeah. It is a cool boat. I saw it when I was there last, or not last year, but the year before. It's a very cool boat.
Well, I hope to see it in June when I get there. So
Yeah,
you'll
but yeah, I mean, it's I think it's a great idea. I mean, it's kind of like it's similar to the idea of the National Guard in the US, right? Where they the states each have their own National Guard
I
branch of
think
the
so, yeah.
National Guard, right? I mean, the National Guard down there, I think, is somewhat paramilitary, but they're the ones who get called in during natural disasters to help with cleanup and to help with saving people, and that's kind of what it sounds like Nova Scotia's got planned, which I think is a great idea. I mean, the problem with the Canadian military is that it's been gutted by Justin Trudeau to the point where, it's almost a non-entity now. Like the Canadian military turned into like a glorified disaster relief group, right? I mean, that's what they tend to do more disaster relief in Canada than they do actually going to conflict zones around the world. Like it's getting kind of silly. I mean, we don't have an icebreaker. We don't have, we don't have modern firearms. We don't have modern, equipment and all of that. I mean, we don't even have planes yet that were made in the last 50 years. I mean, it's the Canadian government has turned our military into a kind of a joke. And I would really love to see the military get back to being what it is supposed to be and make Canada proud on the international stage. And I think one of the steps needed to allow the Canadian military to return to its former glory is to take this disaster relief off the table for them. And I think, that's a great first step by Nova Scotia, and I wish all the other provinces would follow suit.
Yeah, and in fact, I mean, that's really to me exactly what it's doing. It lays out that it's leading Nova Scotia's coordinated emergency and disaster preparedness, response, and recovery initiatives. They lead the coordination of all the organizations, internal and external, that respond to emergencies and disasters, and working closely with the communities as well as the Indigenous and federal municipal governments and private sector partners. That's everything that the disaster relief part of the armed forces does. And I think this is a great idea to bring it because you've got a list of community volunteers in Nova Scotia. I mean, let's just say in your province, because we all should be doing this, so that when something happens, you okay, oh, let's call up Ralph and Sam, et cetera, and they're on the ground within hours instead of only asking the federal government for the military to come and they're there in a week. I mean, this is great. I think every province should be following Nova Scotia's example. I love this.
Way to go, Nova Scotia.
Yep, absolutely. So, see, we can do it. We can wrap the show up on positives once every 8 months or so.
Yeah, good for us.
Good for us. So, yep, way to go, Nova Scotia. And yes, I'm going to look for that blue nose when I get there in a few months. All right, so
Awesome.
we're going to wrap it up there, Canada. We do want to thank you for joining us. And until next week, it is Tony in Saskatchewan.
And Lewis out here in BC. Good night.
Good night, Canada.
This is Canadian Common Sense with Lewis and Tony.